Now, secondly, the Buddhist attitude towards work. Now, I must begin by saying, though time is short, that in the West we've all got the wrong idea about work. To begin with, we think, sometimes we say, that everybody should work. By which we mean that everybody should work for money. And we think and we say that it's wrong not to work. It's sinful not to work. To be gainfully employed, as the phrase is. And this is undoubtedly a legacy from Protestantism. If you like, you can look up that very famous classic, Tawney's Religion and the Rise of Capitalism. You'll find it all detailed there. And most of us find, I'm afraid, that if we take a few days off and just don't do anything, well, we tend to have a bit of a bad conscience about it, not to, say, feel guilty about it, as though we ought not to be having a few days off, ought not to be enjoying ourselves, ought not to be just not doing anything. And some people I know can't even spend a few hours extra in bed in the morning without feeling horribly guilty about it, because they've been brought up, because they've been conditioned in this way. We feel usually that we ought to be doing something. And suddenly we see people sitting down and not doing anything. We feel all fidgety and uncomfortable and want to get them moving and doing something, because it's a sort of almost standing menace to us if they're just sitting there quietly like that while we're getting on with it. Otherwise, this is not a new thing, it's an old thing. You find it in the Gospels, in the story of Martha and Mary. How Martha was sort of bustling around and getting everything ready, and Mary was just sitting there at the feet of Christ, just listening, actually listening when there was food to be got ready and served and washing up to be done. But Christ, you may remember, said that Mary had the better part. Or more colloquially, she had the best of the bargain. And Martha, only the second best. But in the West, we tend to be very much Martha's rather than Mary's. In fact, this sort of feeling that we have to be doing something is a sort of disease, we may say, in the West, especially in the Anglo-Saxon countries, including, of course, the United States of America. I remember that when I was in Kalimpong, we had staying with us for some time, or staying in Kalimpong itself for some time, a very worthy French woman who became a Buddhist nun. And she was a tremendous activist. She was always doing things, she had her cell in spick and span condition. She was always washing and scrubbing and wringing out and rinsing and putting out to dry and taking in to scrub. And she was feeding cats and feeding dogs and whitewashing things and climbing up ladders and carrying big buckets of water and studying Sanskrit and learning up her Pali dictionary and reading Tibetan and going to the bazaar and all sorts of things she was doing morning, noon and night. And one day she came to me for advice about her spiritual state. So I said, my dear Anila, Anila is how one addresses nuns in Tibetan, it means auntie. My dear Anila, there's one thing that you must learn. She said, well, what's that? She's all a godly. To learn it. So I said, you must learn to waste time. So her face fell, in fact it went scarlet with rage or with indignation, I'm not sure which. And she had sent without another word and she just went away. But she did come again, and I recurred to this and I said, seriously, you must learn to waste time. You've got a compulsive urge to work, even though you have become a nun. So you look at these Indians, look at these Tibetans, how they sit around, they don't do anything all day. How wonderful it is. So she almost spat with contempt when I said that. But there is a very great deal of truth, I'm sure, in this advice. But unfortunately, in the West, we only too often look down on those who don't, or those who won't, work. And we call them by all sorts of rude names. We say that they're social parasites, and that they're layabouts, and so on and so forth. We don't consider them at all respectable. But incidentally, it did occur to me, I'd never thought of it before, but while I was thinking over this lecture, it did occur to me that the Buddha himself never did a day's work in his life. And I think this requires reflection upon that the Buddha never did a single day's work, so far as we know, in his life. He was born into a wealthy aristocratic family. He had lots of servants. He never did any work at home. Not a stroke. According to the best accounts, he spent most of his time in three palaces with singing girls and dancing girls and musical instruments, and he didn't move out. This is what the scriptures tell us. And then after he left home, after he went out as a mendicant, well, he lived of other people. Other people gave him food, other people gave him clothing. He never did anything for that. Of course, he preached, but he would have preached anyway, just so the sun shines anyway. But he never did any work. He never worked for money. He never worked for hire. So this is perhaps something to consider, that the Buddha, the enlightened one, never did a single honest day's work in his life. Now, I'm speaking of work, of course, in the sense of employment. Huh? But there is such a thing as creative work, and creative work, we may say, is a psychological necessity. We do need to create, we do need to produce. It may be only in the form of cooking. It may be only in the form, I say only, but it's a very important activity, of producing and bringing up and educating children. Or it may be in the form of writing or painting, or it may be some constructive social venture, but we do need to produce, we do need to create. This is a psychological, a human need, a human necessity. But it need not be linked with employment. Ideally, one may say, if one thinks just for a moment of the ideal society, no one should have to work for wages. I think the ideal state of affairs would be one in which one gives to the community, to other people, whatever one can, in the way of one's work, one's labour, one's productivity, one's creativity, and the community gives to each person whatever they need, not only materially, but psychologically and spiritually also, for their own life. But I think the day when that will happen is quite a long way off, and meanwhile we do have to work. Now, we do have to be gainfully employed in the ordinary sense. And so therefore here we have to apply this principle of right livelihood. And I've often spoken about this, and so I'm not going to say very much about it on this occasion, but in brief, right livelihood means that through our means of livelihood there should be no exploitation of others and no degradation of oneself. If one does have to engage for any reason in work which is non-creative, which is mechanical, which is repetitive, then try to work part-time. Here, with regard to this sort of work, the principle to be applied is do as little of it as possible, as little as is compatible with one's existence economically in the world. And in any case, whatever work one does, however one is employed, there should always be time for study, for meditation, for contact with friends, and other positive and creative things.